Colorado. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland. The time is, let's have a look at that. Hey, it's 7:59 and 30 seconds right there on the dot. Positively Revolting is coming up next with a special International Women's Day special. But first, we got some news from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, March 11th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen The Big Sick. This screening benefits the Bus Project. Again, that's The Big Sick, showing Monday, March 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll screen the documentary film Circle of Poison on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Once a pesticide is banned in the United States for its dangerous health and environmental effects, companies are still permitted to manufacture it for export only. Circle of Poison documents the export of dangerous pesticides and the inspiring ways communities are fighting back. Again, that's Circle of Poison on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're tuned in to KBOO Portland. Time is 8:01, and it's time for Positively Revolting.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning, good morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Ani, and this is International Women's Day. That's right, we are into our third hour of special programming honoring femme-identified people around the globe. And so this is, I'm always really honored to be a part of this tradition here on KBOO. And like many other years, we turn our attention on this International Women's Day to women's access to safe and legal abortion. Also looking at the issue of sovereignty over our own bodies and our right to control our own reproductive destiny. And to help us do just that, I have a couple of guests joining me this morning, and I want to welcome them now. Samantha Gladue, good morning to you. Okay, we'll find Samantha in a moment. And in the meantime, we welcome Stephanie Ospina. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
Good morning. Stephanie, you are the education manager at Planned Parenthood, Great Northwest and Hawaiian Islands. I'm very happy to have you on. You are also on the board of the Northwest Abortion Access Fund. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Let's start off with just telling listeners what the Northwest Abortion Access Fund is. Can you, let's start with that.
Yeah, so we are a pretty small and scrappy grassroots organization, and we fundraise to get the funds for people who need abortions. Folks can call us, and we have a hotline. We run a hotline, and if you're needing financial assistance for your procedure, basically you call us, get some of your information, and then we're able to help you financially, hopefully, in any amount between $100 to $200. And we send that money directly to the clinics. We partner with a lot of clinics here in the Pacific Northwest. And that's really our main focus, is making sure that people have financial assistance to get the services that they need.
Absolutely, because, you know, it really has always struck me that, you know, we see the Roe decision in 73. And that landmark decision guarantees, quote-unquote, a woman's right to choose abortion as a medical service. It affirmed the privacy between the woman and her doctor, and in made it the law of the land, so that it was, no matter what state you lived in, it was a right to have reproductive choices that included abortion. And it was just 4 years later that the Hyde Amendment went into effect. And the Hyde Amendment restricted funds available for abortion, preventing federal funding. For people who were on federal financial assistance programs, that coverage would not pay for abortion. And we, you know, saw very quickly devastating impact that had on women who were struggling financially. Rosie Jimenez was the first woman who died because she could not fund her legal abortion, and so went to another provider who was not providing safe abortions, but, you know, cut rate. So she, you know, we honor Rosie Jimenez every year as we look at the devastating impacts that restricting funding for abortion has had. Because it's one thing to make it legally available, but it's a whole separate thing to make it financially available. Can you speak a little to that point, Stephanie?
Absolutely. Yeah. You absolutely cover that really well, and it really becomes an issue about economic justice at this point when we say that we have access to abortion federally, but it really then depends on your location or your income level to be able to have access to abortion. So here in the Pacific Northwest, we see a really big range of disparity between the states. So, for example, in Washington, if you have Apple Health or Medicaid, your abortion would be covered. But right next door in Idaho, Medicaid does not cover any abortions, and actually they have a pretty large restrictions with private insurances covering abortion. So we actually end up covering a lot of folks from Idaho, even though I live here in Washington. We also have different barriers for folks who are undocumented, or in Alaska, you have to be able to prove that you have lived there for X amount of years. So at the end of the day, abortion access is not equitable across our country, and it really depends on where you live and, you know, the access to the money that you have.
No, absolutely. And not only, you know, the money is one thing, and a very substantial thing, you know, not to downplay that at all. But another type of access is actually getting to a clinic that will provide you services. As we know, in Oregon, I think it's about 30% of women in Oregon are not in a county where abortion services are provided. And that is, echoed around the country, so that some states have only one abortion provider for the entire state, or maybe no abortion providers.
Yeah, and that really makes it a barrier for people, especially folks that have family, that have to find childcare, or might have to get a hotel overnight. Here between Washington and Oregon, we see that most of the providers are up and down the I-5 corridor, making it easy for people living in cities to access these clinics, but folks living in rural communities are having a harder time accessing this. And sometimes it just becomes such a big barrier that you don't have the abortion at the end of the day. It's just really difficult for people to travel big distances if they have other commitments, especially if it's already a hard financial burden on them.
Yeah, and I can absolutely attest to a lot of that from my own personal experience of working in a clinic that provided abortion services here in Portland in the 80s and early 90s. And, you know, I would see women who were traveling from half the state away, you know, a many-hour drive, who were here for a procedure that would last a couple of days, maybe, and just trying to find the time to take off work, to find alternate childcare if that was, you know, a situation. You know, there were so many barriers for that person who was traveling, financial barriers for finding a place to stay in Portland, and those sorts of things really add up and impact the right to choose. I think that we have Samantha on the phone now. I want to say good morning to Samantha. Good morning, Samantha.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we have been talking with Stephanie for a little while now about what the Northwest Abortion Access Fund is and does. We're talking about accessing abortion, even if it is legally allowable, looking at other barriers, other things that prevent women from actually accessing abortion, such as finances and traveling to actually be in a location with a provider. And there's, you know, so I want to, again, just welcome you onto the airwaves, catch you up for a moment, and also introduce you to our listeners. Samantha Gladue is the executive director of the Bus Project. That is a nonprofit that amplifies the voice and leadership of young people to achieve a more just and equitable Oregon, and is also on the board of the Northwest Abortion Access Fund. And
thank you so much.
Absolutely. Let's talk about, you know, as we've talked a little bit about access issues, Oregon has the most unrestricted access to abortion in the country, I understand. Is that accurate, Samantha or Stephanie?
Yes, it is. We passed the Reproductive Health Equity Act, which is a groundbreaking law, the most progressive abortion rights legislation in our country, which not only codifies the right to abortion, should Roe be overturned, but also provides access to the full range of reproductive health services for all people in Oregon, regardless of immigration status or gender marker. It's truly amazing.
That is fantastic. I want to actually look at that as well, in that when we talk about reproductive justice and we talk about reproductive choice, a lot of people sort of hear that as code for we just are focused on abortion and we want to make sure that abortion is accessible and legal. But it's more than that, right? Reproductive justice is more than that. Samantha, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Reproductive justice is this radical notion that people should be able to have the resources, whether it's economic, social, or political, and the information and the conditions needed to live their lives and have families in the ways that they would choose. The term came about when a group of brilliant Black women, of course it's always brilliant Black women, right, called Sister Song, mm-hmm. coined the term as they were looking to capture an idea of a more just vision for the world that hadn't been encompassed in traditional reproductive, well, sorry, not traditional
but in mainstream white conversations about reproductive rights and reproductive health.
Right. And let's, I want to sort of jump around just a little bit. We have so much to cover and, you know, only an hour to do it. Stephanie, I know that you have to leave us about 8:30 because you have a very busy day lined up. But as the education manager in Planned Parenthood, I want to talk to you about the sort of current stigmatization of seeking an abortion and what kind of misinformation you're finding as women are looking into health services.
Yeah, so a lot of my experience is in classrooms and partnering with different schools to make sure that students have access to comprehensive sex education. And what we're finding is that a lot of the times when we're working in more conservative communities, folks are just really scared to bring comprehensive sex education that would really help folks make the right decisions for themselves, because a lot of the times they think of Planned Parenthood is synonymous with abortion, or they think that sexual health education is actually going to lead to more sex and therefore more abortions. So there's a lot of fear and stigma around young people having sex and having, you know, the information it deserves.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know that when I was working at the Feminist Women's Health Center, I would talk to women who were really unclear as to, you know, how to prevent pregnancy in the first place. There's a lot of misinformation around fertility, the calendar method of contraception, and how, well, if you did these three things, you could probably end a pregnancy yourself without actually talking to somebody. You know, I'd seen women who had done self-harm, attempting to self, you know, to induce an abortion themselves. Can you tell, is that sort of thing still going on today?
It's a little hard for me to answer that question because I'm mostly with youth. I'm educating on sexual health as a whole. And I don't have a perspective of the clinic. And I think that it probably still is happening, but I don't personally have that information to share.
Okay, fair enough. Let's look at how people can actually help to guarantee the access to abortion and support the Northwest Abortion Access Fund. How do people find out more about what you do, what services and support you offer, and how can they support the Access Fund as well?
Yeah, we are active on all social media channels, and we also have a website. If people look up Northwest Abortion Access Fund, they'll find it. And we also have accounts under the name NW, like Northwest, AA for Abortion Access, and Fund. And currently, we are doing our annual fundraiser, which is a bowl-a-thon. It's a national fundraiser that we do with the National Network of Abortion Funds, where people get together and kind of like a marathon or a walk-a-thon, have teams and fundraise online. But then instead of culminating the event with running and getting really sweaty, you bowl and maybe get sweaty as well. Or have, in some other states, they have dance-a-thons. And in Washington State, we're having a bingo-thon.
A bingo-thon. Okay, fantastic. Yeah. I first found out actually about the Northwest Abortion Access Fund when I saw information about a bowl-a-thon a little while back. And I love that idea. I really want to applaud you on that. All right. I want to let folks know you are listening to your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Ani. And with me this morning, I have two board members from the Northwest Abortion Access Fund. That is Stephanie Ospina and Samantha Gladue. We see. There's, again, so much to cover. In looking at the Northwest, we had talked about how Oregon's laws are pretty unrestricted. Washington, as well as California. But then we're right next to Idaho, Nevada, and other states that really, well, I looked at a map earlier, and looking at the map of which states are more restricted in their abortion access and which states are less, I was really struck by how few states seem to have more or less unrestricted access to abortion services, and how most of the country at this point are finding themselves in situations where you have to have some sort of bias counseling, you have to have waiting periods before you actually have the medical services you've already discussed with your doctor, and all of these other restrictions. And that, I think, sort of set my, you know, looking at the Supreme Court right now, looking at state laws that are coming into focus in the last couple of days, or legal precedents being set just in the last couple of days. I believe Tennessee just passed a fetal heartbeat law, and Alabama just had a legal precedent set on Monday, I believe, wherein they're recognizing fetal personhood and allowing the estate of an aborted fetus to sue a clinic and practitioners in that clinic. And I just, again, looking at legislation ahead, are there things that you are particularly concerned about, either Samantha or Stephanie, things that we really want to be focused on and paying attention to? Because it seems like we're really living in perilous times when it comes to whether we can pay for abortion services. It seems like there is definitely a movement afoot, and it's gaining traction in the courts to restrict the restrict availability of abortion and the legality of abortion.
Yeah, absolutely. And just this week in Georgia, one of the chambers of the legislature passed a heartbeat bill as well. We are watching that super closely, and being part of the National Network of Abortion Funds helps us really get an understanding of the patchwork of abortion laws that has resulted from politicians restricting access to abortion. We know that these types of laws disproportionately impact Black and Brown people and low-income people, and they're a method to control our reproductive freedom. They're not about safety, as some of the proponents of these anti-abortion laws say.
And I think it's super important to, again, recognize the impact that this would have on financially, on poor people. Because we know that before Roe, if a woman who had the means found herself with a pregnancy that she chose to terminate, she could travel. She could travel to a part of the world, even, that would provide this service in a medical setting. So if you've had means, you've generally had a way to access this medical service. But again, go ahead.
Interestingly, that remains true today, where abortion access really is about having the means to do so. Only 17 states provide Medicaid access, Medicaid-covered abortion. And
it's only 17.
And 90% of counties in our country do not have an abortion provider. So we get to instances where, just like here in the Northwest, where people have to travel the I-5 corridor and across states to get to a provider, people have to do that throughout the country.
Right. That is just, again, thinking about the hardship that that creates for people. And there is actually, though, some fighting back about a federal gag rule wherein Oregon, California, Colorado are actually fighting the federal abortion gag rule and bringing suit to the feds. Is that, do you have any information on that?
Yeah, currently there's a lawsuit against this administration to challenge the global gag rule. And sorry, it's actually a country gag rule.
Right.
This gag rule would make it so that no health provider that receives federal dollars can also provide abortion. And it would require a separation of care that is unprecedented, impractical, and unacceptable.
Absolutely. So that would apply, for example, let's look at Planned Parenthood as a great example of that, as there's a full range of services Planned Parenthood provides, including health screenings, STD treatments, you know, as well as contraceptives, as well as abortion services and well woman care. And so what you're saying is in this gag rule, in order for that clinic to receive any kind of federal funds to provide the cancer screenings and well woman care, that they would not be able to perform abortions within that building, within that clinic. It would have to be a separate facility.
Yeah.
All right. And Stephanie, since you are with Planned Parenthood, can you talk about how that impacts Planned Parenthood's work?
Yeah, absolutely. So a big majority of our patients are low-income folks who come to us to get those cancer screenings that you were just talking about, get their STI treatments, pregnancy tests, et cetera. So it would really be impacting the patients and who is able to access us. Again, it would mean that as a facility, we would have to have different facilities for just abortion care that are completely unnecessary. And like Samantha said, it's not about safety. It's about restriction to low-income people who we know often are Black and brown people because of the racism in this country.
Absolutely.
And I do have to hop off the phone, but I want to thank you for having us and good luck with the rest of the podcast.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, and thank you for joining us for this half hour. And we'll go ahead and continue on with Samantha. Again, thank you very much, Stephanie Ospina, a board member from the Northwest Abortion Access Fund. And remaining, we have Samantha Gladue. Hello again.
Hello.
I want to remind folks that you are listening to KBOO. We are your community radio station. And this is International Women's Day. We have special programming started at 5:30 in the morning and will be ending at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Special programming going on all day long. At 9 o'clock, Jan Hawken will be talking about the International Women's Strike and Reproductive Justice. At 10 o'clock, Linda Olson Osterlin will be speaking with former FBI special agent and whistleblower Colleen Raleigh. At 10:30, KBOO has an interview with newly elected Commissioner Joanne Hardesty about her journey through the political scene as a woman. And at 11 o'clock, Rabia Yemin will be on with Digital Divide, speaking with Elizabeth Fournier, a green mortician and eco educator. All of this is made possible with your support, KBOO members. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and just click the button marked donate. We will have music, we will have news, we will have interviews aplenty throughout the day. I know I personally am back at midnight tonight with my annual program featuring women that scream a lot, really loud women who will be played between midnight and 3 a.m. I hope you can't sleep. I won't be. So we'll be listening to women screaming together. And I invite folks actually to scream along. It's kind of a scream along show. Anyway, all of that said, I want to also give out the phone number here for Talk Radio. Please, listeners, you can call in with your questions, with your comments, with your stories. That number is 503-231-8187. We are talking about accessing abortion care and funding abortion care. But I also, you know, this is that time, International Women's Day, the phrase abortion on demand without apology has been a rallying cry for 4 decades now, right? 4.5.
Yeah.
And yet it seems like more and more people are a little more apologetic. I think there might be a little bit of a pendulum swing back. But over the last 5-6 years, I've really noticed that that there's a lot more hesitation when people talk about abortion, and that there's a little more, well, you know, sometimes it's just necessary. But we really try not, you know. Have you noticed this as well, Samantha? That hesitation, mm-hmm. that on demand without apology is a little more apologetic than it used to be?
Living in the Northwest with the headquarters of Shout Your Abortion directly to the north of us.
Yes.
I tend to feel as though everyone in my circles is talking about abortion all the time. But right. I know that outside of those, yes. For example, I posted a picture of a tag in a bathroom stall that said abortion on demand without apology on my Instagram account.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my peers actually responded and said, what? Like, that seems really intense. And I was surprised that they hadn't heard that before.
Right.
And also hadn't talked about it. And I think that the squeamishness and the stigma around talking about abortion stems from a few things, right? There's our culture and communities being very organized to pass anti-abortion policy. There's mm-hmm. also this idea that we have so much shame around our bodies and also are squeamish about talking about pleasure and sexuality. And then there's, you know, the systematic separation of abortion from other health care, which hasn't happened with any other medical procedure,
right.
and creates a scenario where abortion is held up as this weird separate thing, when in reality, it's a basic medical procedure that is very common and doesn't take that long.
Right. And that has always struck me. You know, the fact that there's, you know, you get a tonsillectomy, you get an appendectomy, right? You have medical services, but then there's abortion, which is, well, kind of like a medical service because you get it at a doctor's or a clinic, but there's all of this other social stuff added onto that. And the way that it's legislated is certainly not like any other legislation we see on medical procedures. It seems like the legislation comes with a heavy dose of morality, you know, and whose morality? Mm-hmm. When we see a very, very safe medical procedure that we're told patients have to wait to access, that have to actually get misinformation about risks involved, have to undergo emotional hardships, like being forced to look at an ultrasound of the fetus, you know, and all of the heartbeat laws talking about the heartbeat stuff. That does really remove it from the realm of other medical procedures and takes it into someplace else. So it
absolutely
it becomes pretty clear that it's not about safety or the practice of medicine. It's really about controlling women's lives by controlling their bodies and their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And reproduction and the ability to decide when to parent and how to parent is a huge economic influencer in people's lives, right? Right. If people are able to, you know, make the decision about when to parent rather than needing to carry out, like, you know, an unexpected decision to parent, they're likely to be in a different position in terms of feeling ready, though I don't know if anyone is completely ready to become a parent, right? People are always like, oh no, once they get there. But the economic reality of forcing somebody to carry a pregnancy to term and then have that child and like that forced parenthood is really cruel and also keeps people in like economic scarcity, right? We know that a recent Federal Reserve study showed that not many people in this country have the extra money that it takes to cover an unexpected expense. So that $400 to $650 for an abortion, that is usually unexpected, most people don't have. And that's why abortion funds are so important, because as people are making the choices between whether they can afford their rent or whether they can have specific medicine,
right,
and also get their abortion, abortion funds are here to help bridge that gap and show some compassion and care for people as they make their own decisions, regardless of what any politicians think they should be able to do.
It just makes sense. I want to give that phone number out again and encourage you to call in, especially femme-identified people. Call in. It is our day. This is International Women's Day here on KABU and around the world. Call in at 503-231-8187. Please do your questions, your comments, your own stories. This is a great time to share them. I am I'm Ani, and I'm speaking with Samantha Gladue. She is on the board of the Northwest Abortion Access Fund, and we are talking about making sure that reproductive rights and abortion is not just safe and legal, but also accessible financially. And that is such a, you know, again, to have an available medical service that is inaccessible because of finances and restrictions on financing is not really, you know, it defeats its own purpose, right? And again, I think that looking at how this country often uses systemic oppression to control women, especially poor women, especially women of color, and see how all of these points come together when we look at access to abortion. It's something that we cannot overlook. 503-231-8187. Also, to let you know, you can follow along Positively Revolting throughout the week. And on our Facebook page, you can find us Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can also find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. I want to ask you about the Bowl-a-thon coming up, Samantha.
Yeah.
When is that?
It is April 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Kellogg Bowl in Milwaukee. Those of you who live in Portland may know that we are sadly losing so many of our bowling alleys in the city. But there's still a really great one in Milwaukee called Kellogg Bowl. So we'll be there. We're going to have pizza, and we're going to have prizes. But the fun really lies in the fundraising that is happening now through the end of April. And if you search for Bullathon and abortion online, you'll be able to find how to get involved. There's this really great online fundraising platform where you can register a team, you can recruit some of your friends, set a fundraising goal, and then go for it. Reach for the stars. The past few years, I've had really fun benefit shows. I play bass in a couple of feminist punk bands, and we have brought together other bands to raise money for abortion access. And it's such a great way to get our communities involved in a fundraiser by planning an event, which is the type of thing that you and your friends would already go to, and then opening up the world of abortion access and fundraising for a really great cause to them.
That is so fantastic. So again, for that information, you said that you can search online Bullathon and abortion access. Are people able to find it on the homepage of Northwest Abortion Access Fund, or no?
It's definitely posted on all of our Facebook and other social media sites right now. And I don't know that we added it to our website.
Because I didn't find it there. Okay. And I thought maybe that's just me. Okay.
I know, right?
So social media is the way to keep up. And I love that idea. I can't say that enough. Let's go ahead and talk to Jim. Good morning, Jim. You're on the air.
Morning, ladies.
Morning.
I'll give you a real quick statement about who I am. I'm a 73-year-old liberal guy. I had experiences with illegal abortions when I was a young man. I took my buddy's girlfriend to a back alley in East L.A. to have an illegal abortion. I remember it incredibly well. So that's my credentials. I'm 100% behind women's reproductive rights, absolutely 100%. But I think one of the things we're missing in this conversation is the fact that the legislators in our government that are making these decisions about non-funding for women's productive rights and counseling and all the other things mm-hmm. that go along with it is the fact that what we're missing is basically the separation of church and state. We're mm-hmm. letting people that are religious believers influence the government to make decisions that are of their ilk.
Yeah.
And we see it all the time. And so the issue is much larger than just women's protective rights. It's about petitioning the government. You know, we see it. I see it constantly. I hate this creeping in of religious conservative folks that are influencing decision makers.
Yeah,
and this, I don't know how to get past that.
This certainly has been going on for a while. I mean, you know, the idea of a coming theocracy, sort of embodied in Mike Pence, is definitely, you know, terrifying. And
you know, when they're bringing religion into common everyday use in the government, I mean,
yeah, and Jim, we've seen that, you know, since Reagan with the moral majority. You know, that this has been a wedge that they have really driven for 35 years now.
And it's not, it seems to be getting worse.
Yes, I concur.
And I don't know, it's very frustrating on my part.
Yeah, and it seems
and
to
it's frustrating for me to see women that are being directly affected by this thing.
Yeah.
I've always been one to say that if you don't believe in abortion and you don't believe in other concepts about that, then don't do it. But you can't tell the rest of the people that it's not available. I'll even go a step further than that. How can you tell a woman that's an atheist that has an unwanted pregnancy she wants to get rid of that she's committing a sin.
I mean, yeah.
Like, the concept is...
Well, it's outrageous. Ridiculous. You are absolutely right. It is outrageous. It's also infantilizing the woman. It's saying that you can't be trusted to make a decision about your life or about being a moral being on this planet. And that's really galling.
Yes, Jim, I know. It's really sad. It's hard to watch it happen. I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I give you ladies all the power I can provide.
Jim, thank you very much for your call this morning.
You bet.
Take care.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. On that note, that brings up a really interesting point that I think we can be a little more explicit when we talk about politicians restricting access to abortion and dive deeper into who are those politicians. And they are overwhelmingly white, wealthy, conservative men who are introducing these bills to restrict abortion access. And to Jim's point about, you know, the way that religion influences these policies, we see in particular in Idaho, conservative religious folks moving there and taking over complete jurisdiction in all levels of government and building these not only conservative but also white supremacist leaning structures of governance. And that is something that deeply concerns me, and I think that one of the solutions is building up leaders and building up people who are eager to run for office and serve in that way to counter some of the conservative folks. Dollar to dollar, conservative movements invest way more money in their leadership and political development, and it's time for more progressive folks to do the same.
I think that's, again, super important. And we've seen, you know, really up until this last midterm election, I have not seen super progressive folks banding together to do smart electoral politics. And this is something that we have seen repeatedly from the arch conservatives and from those that would like to bring on the theocracy. It's a super important point, Samantha. Thank you for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, connecting younger people and engaging in politics is, I'm going to say, something that you're probably pretty familiar with doing as somebody working with the Bus Project. Can you talk mm-hmm. about your involvement and how that seeks to bring younger people into the political milieu and actually engaging in that scene?
Yeah, so in my day job, I'm the executive director of the Bus Project, which is a nonpartisan nonprofit in Oregon that amplifies the diverse voices and leadership of young people here in the state so that we can work toward a more just and equitable future. And we do this in a few ways. We drive votes, we drive leaders, and we drive change. So we look for all of the votes possible and think about how to engage people in our systems so that they are participating. And we also do big voter registration drives. We pass policy and we do a ton of leadership development. And one of the coolest policies that we have been a part of was passing our nation's first automatic voter registration law.
Ah, yes.
Yes, and super relevant today as Congress is hearing House Resolution 1, which involves some of Oregon's cornerstone voting rights policies. We know that things like automatic voter registration increase the not only volume of the electorate, but also the likelihood that they'll participate in the elections. And I think it's really important for people to know that their opinion matters and their vote really does matter, you know? Our governor, for example, Kate Brown, won her first election to the legislature by only 7 votes. And when people say that they don't vote because they're not sure it matters, that is a story that completely counteracts that, right? And the governor signed our nation's most amazing Reproductive Health Equity Act into law, as well as a bill called Cover All Kids, which provides insurance coverage to all children, regardless of immigration status. And those kinds of policies only happen when people are able to elect people or run for office and really lead with these values, right? And the fact that she won with 7 votes really illustrates the importance of people getting out there and making their voices heard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go ahead and squeeze in a caller here and talk to Bill. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning. This subject is like one of the most interesting things to me as an African-American male. My mother, being African-American, being 65 years of age, I was having a conversation with her not long ago about her options when she was younger with respect to health care. And she grew up in the South, and not only did she not have access to health care in her community, but there were only white doctors who refused to see blacks as a whole. And she explained to me that just to get information on reproductive rights or just get information on reproductive medicines, she had to travel 60 miles to another town as an African-American woman just to get access to, I guess, even then untraditional medicine, because it was clinics that was providing that information and service to her. Mm-hmm. And that burden that she carried was kind of an interesting thing, that here we are having a conversation about not just the social impacts of these things, but it was still primarily white men making decisions about women's rights. And so I would encourage men to have talks with the women that they know, not the stranger, but find out what it was that your mother faced or your aunt faced. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe bringing men into this conversation informed by their experiences of the people they love, maybe we can arrive at a different point by which we begin to understand that that should be something held by the woman and not men.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, we find that it is still primarily white, primarily wealthy, primarily male-identified people that are still controlling legislation around reproductive health care, as we were just talking about. Samantha, do you have more to comment on?
Yeah, the story and the history of how Black women have been completely discounted and marginalized by our mainstream healthcare systems is so heartbreaking, and it continues to this day, with maternal mortality rates being so radically different for Black women than white women.
Absolutely.
In this country. The rates haven't really gotten better in the last several decades and even hundreds of years. And to Bill's point, you know, I think it is, again, like, so important to have representation of Black women in the medical field and to really, like, invest in the leadership of communities who have been underrepresented and kept out of these professions.
Absolutely. And I mean, and one of the things that we see, you know, because all issues, you know, I for a couple of years, I started off International Women's Day with talk radio with Mara Cullen, who has since passed away. But we used to call our show All Struggle is the Same Struggle and look at how different struggles for liberation around the world were tied together through an anti-colonialist lens, and looking at class and looking at reproductive health care, and seeing how all of these things were really very interconnected, once again, through the lens of accessing reproductive health care and the legislation around it, we really look at the systems of oppression that institutionalized racism, classism, and sexism come together to once again have the most impact. The most weight is carried by the most marginalized women, being mm-hmm. Black and brown and poor women in this country. So just really want to tie all of those, the intersectionality of this, and needs to be addressed. Let's see. Sherry, good morning. You're on the air. Let's talk to you.
Good morning. I wanted to echo your speaker's insistence that we really do have power, and we sometimes just need to show up in the halls of power and let our legislators know that we're there. And Friends of Family Farmers is having their biennial Farmer Rancher Day of Action, or where we say family farms mean business. And I'm sure many of you saw the Oregonian expose on big corporations and all the power that they have and how many rules and regulations we have in the state that are completely benefiting, you know, the timber companies and the oil companies and the gas transportation companies and big ag. And this is an opportunity for everyone to head down to Salem and say family farms mean business. We love local farms. We want healthy food.
Okay. And Sherry, I'm going to cut you off right about there, because yes, we love family farms. Yes, that's all important. And we're talking about reproductive health care just for another couple of minutes. And I'm going to just try to keep that topic in focus, because, again, we are looking at our right to access safe, legal abortions and to make sure that all women can access those services.
On Sherry's note, though, going to Salem is super important.
Yes.
And talking with your lawmakers or even meeting them in the district, right? On every single issue that you care about, it is absolutely your right to talk to your lawmaker about your opinion and what you would like to see them do. And whether that's an email or going to a coffee that they have in your district or going to Salem, please, by all means, everyone, make your voices heard. And today, on International Women's Day, NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon is having their lobby day, and they are primarily looking at the Family Act, which is a groundbreaking paid family leave policy for paid family and medical leave, because nobody should lose their job or lose their home, lose everything to take care of a loved one. Right?
Absolutely.
And we would be one of the first handful of states to pass and implement such a policy. And people have been working very hard on it for a number of years. So come on, legislature, right?
Right.
Can this please be the year so that future generations don't have to worry about gigantic economic setbacks for starting families?
That absolutely makes some sense, right? Samantha, I am so very thankful that you were able to join us this morning. We have just about half a minute left. For people wanting to get more information about the Northwest Abortion Access Fund, how can they do that?
You can look us up online anywhere by typing in Northwest Abortion Access Fund or NWAA Fund, and you'll find us. You can plug into our bolathon. You can plug into helping to run our hotline, and we welcome you in this work. Thanks so much for listening, and Ani, thanks for having me.
Samantha, thank you so much for being there and for supporting KABU in all the ways you do. And, well, stay tuned. International Women's Day programming continuing on. Jan Hawken up next at 9. At 10, Linda Olson Osterlin talking with Colleen Rowley. And it just goes on and on from there until 6 in the morning. Stay tuned.
And that was Positively Revolting on your community radio, KBOO Portland. And that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from One With Heart Martial Arts, offering a transgender self-defense workshop tomorrow, Saturday, March 9th, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., located at 4231 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Pre-registration is required and is open to all transgender individuals age 13 and up. More information online at onewithheart.com.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the screening of the film Hippie Family Values on Saturday, March 9th at 2 p.m. at Darkside Cinema in Corvallis. Filmed over a period of 10 years at a remote communal ranch in New Mexico, Hippie Family Values is an intimate chronicle of a handful of hippie elders along with their adult children and grandkids. The director will be in attendance. Again, that's the screening of the film Hippie Family Values on Saturday, March 9th at 2 p.m. at Darkside Cinema, 215 Southwest 4th Street in Corvallis, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Building Bridges to Sustainability. On Friday, March 8th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at PCC Cascade Campus in Portland. Building Bridges to Sustainability features keynote speakers, presentations, and breakout sessions where participants will have opportunities to gain insights to equity, economic opportunity, and social justice while shaping a culture of sustainability. Again, that's Building Bridges to Sustainability, Friday, March 8th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Port